Peter B. Collins with your news and comment here on Thursday, August 2nd, 2012. Well, back in the old days of the Mission Impossible television show, Peter Graves and Martin Landau, Barbara Bain, they never failed when they accepted one of those impossible missions. But former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has declared that the job of Syrian peace envoy is mission impossible. He said, "I believed it was a sacred duty to do whatever was in my power to help the Syrian people find a peaceful solution to this bloody conflict." And he has given up his efforts to broker some sort of a ceasefire or other outbreak of peace in Syria. He was critical of what he called the disunity of world powers at a time when the Syrian people desperately need action. There continues to be finger-pointing and name-calling in the Security Council. Ban Ki-moon, the current Secretary General, noted in his statement about Annan's resignation that the Security Council's own divisions have themselves become an obstacle to diplomacy, making the work of any mediator vastly more difficult. And he went on, "Tragically, the spiral of violence in Syria is continuing. The hand extended to turn away from violence in favor of dialogue and diplomacy, as spelled out in the 6-point plan, has not been taken, even though it still remains the best hope of the people of Syria." And in another calculated leak, timed for election year consumption from the Obama White House, confirmation was fed to Reuters on Wednesday that Obama has signed what is called a finding. An intelligence finding is a secret order. This one authorizes U.S. support for the rebels, the insurgents, or as Pepe Escobar told us, the hundreds of gangs who are, in an uncoordinated way for the most part, trying to topple the dictatorial regime of Bashar al-Assad. And this is the first public acknowledgement of the covert actions of the United States. And our friend Sabelle Edmonds at Boiling Frogs Post reported some of this 6 months ago, back last November. Here, Reuters says the U.S. government source acknowledged that under the provisions of Obama's presidential finding, the U.S. is collaborating with a secret command center operated by Turkey and its allies. And Sabelle reported not only the base in Turkey, which is near the Syrian border, but also a similar facility in the nation of Jordan on another border with Syria. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, and whether the reason for surfacing this secret finding is to try to build broader support for arming the array of rebels in Syria. According to this story from Reuters, at this point, the Obama administration has not decided to actively arm the opposition. But we know that Qatar and Saudi Arabia are sending guns and some anti-tank weapons into Syria and putting it in the arms of these insurgent groups. So finally, we're starting to see some clarity and a little bit of honesty from the U.S. government about the actual role that we have in trying to toss Assad out of power in Syria. Well, another whistleblower has surfaced who affirms some of what we know regarding the massive illegal wiretapping conducted by the Bush administration, now retroactively legalized under the FISA Amendment Act of 2008. Diane Rourke is a former senior staffer at the House Intelligence Committee, and she once worked at the NSA. She left government in 2002, but she is suing because she says that her knowledge of the illegal wiretapping program and her internal opposition to it led to retaliation. She said, I found out about it. I knew about it. They knew I knew about it. I told everybody they needed to put civil liberties protections on it or eliminate it. She emphatically has denied that she divulged it to the press. I guess the theory is that she leaked it to the New York Times reporters who finally broke the story in December of 2005 that they'd been sitting on for over a year and that could have been material to the outcome of the 2004 presidential election process. And so Diane Rourke is a very interesting figure here. I spoke to her a few minutes ago, and she's agreed to a Peter B. Collins in-depth interview. We'll have that for you next week here at peterbcollins.com. And in a separate conversation with Professor Martin Mueller, who teaches at Syracuse University, today we talked about a recent opinion piece that he published about regulation of the Internet. And one of the topics we touched on is cyber warfare and the aggressive use of the Stuxnet virus and the Flame virus by the U.S. and Israel. And this is part of another calculated leak from the Obama administration to make sure that Romney cannot accuse Obama of being soft on national security issues. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Professor Mueller.
Well, I completely agree with you that we need to have this discussion of cyber weapons. I have always argued, it's kind of a radical argument, but nobody in Washington gets it, that, you know, cyber security and cyber threats are not necessarily threats to the nation in the same way that, you know, a missile attack is. And most cyber attacks are not about taking over the country. Indeed, it's hard to imagine how a cyber attack could cripple the country or allow the takeover of the country without being massively supplemented by traditional military force or troops. Certainly, it could be used for terrorism in various ways, but fundamentally, cyber attacks happen at the organizational level, not at the national level. And you basically have to get the organizations and their specific networks defended rather than looking at cyberspace as, you know, a territory that you're going to defend using weapons or offensive and well, I guess just offensive. But let me go back to Stuxnet. I was irritated and a little bit alarmed when I heard about Stuxnet, but at least it was focused on these nuclear facilities. What really outraged and scared me was the news of the Flame virus. Now, the Flame, the thing that's really disturbing about it is that it is said to have hacked into the Windows update mechanism. Now, think about the meaning of that. Everybody, on a weekly basis, is updating their computers. Well, not everybody. I guess not everybody uses the Microsoft operating system, but...
Well, I am a reluctant user of PCs. I've got a couple of them, and I've disabled the updates.
And then you're exposing yourself to other things by doing that. So yep. This is just an example of how that kind of activity strikes at very fundamentally at the trust that might underlie certain kinds of relationships on the Internet. And then I was having a discussion with somebody from another country, and they were saying to me, look, there's no way that Windows update mechanism could have been cracked without the cooperation of Microsoft. So I don't know whether that's true or not, but he was a software engineer, made a pretty good case. Again, I don't know whether that's true or not, but it's just another little pillar of trust falling over and crumbling. And you're thinking, okay, so you get dominant private companies, and they go behind the scenes and make a deal with American governmental authorities or intelligence agencies, and then not only are you undermining this kind of global information economy and the idea of the free flow of information, you're undermining the whole checks and balances and authority that underlay a democratic system.
We'll release the full interview with Professor Mueller on Friday, along with a conversation with the former Democratic governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman. He will be resentenced in federal court tomorrow, and I expect, unfortunately, that Judge Mark Fuller, who we have revealed to be quite corrupt and ethically conflicted in this case, I am afraid that he will sentence Don Siegelman to another 7 to 9 years in federal prison. I'm hoping for a much better outcome, and we will share my conversation with Governor Siegelman after his sentencing is completed so that it cannot complicate that process. And so we expect to release that on Friday afternoon. Also, if you want to try to catch me live on the radio, I'll be sitting in for Carell on his syndicated program on Friday afternoon, and you can get the details from radiokrl.com, the website for Carell's radio program. I just referenced leaks, and I do believe that the information about the kill and capture program, with the details of how President Obama personally approves the drone strikes that kill alleged terrorists, the leak about the Stuxnet virus, and now the leak about the top secret presidential finding about Syria. Well, they are trying to track down the leakers in Washington. The FBI agents have interviewed current and former high-level government officials from multiple agencies in recent weeks, and they have touched on the White House, the Pentagon, the NSA, the CIA. It appears to be the most sweeping inquiry into intelligence disclosures in years. And this creates some very interesting potential ironies and contradictions. I believe that most of these leaks came from officials in or affiliated with the White House. And the Obama administration has a sordid record of being the most aggressive in prosecuting whistleblowers and leakers. Bradley Manning is the most obvious poster child for that particular issue. And so now they have to find the leakers. The leakers might be right there adjacent to the Oval Office or at the Pentagon or somewhere close to the presidential network. So let's just see how that security crackdown plays out. In the House of Representatives on Wednesday, there's much other important business that they should be attending to. For example, fixing the problem with the post office. And I am so infuriated because in the news summary on the public television news hour on Wednesday evening, they referenced that the U.S. Postal Department had failed to make a $5.5 billion payment to the Federal Treasury for future retiree health benefits. And they failed to mention that this is a phony creation of Congress. And that they offered some figure. I think they said that, the Postal Service was in the red by $20 billion. They are not running an operating deficit at this time, to the best of my knowledge. The only deficit is created by Congress in this demand for an unrealistic prepayment of these benefits. So instead of dealing with that and other important issues, the Republicans passed another election year measure, which is intended to extend all of the Bush tax cuts that are set to expire in January. And if you heard us last week, the Senate passed an unrelated bill that passed, it extends all of the tax cuts except for people who earn more than $250,000 a year. And when you hear the Republicans talking about how the economy is so fragile and we can't raise taxes on the rich because what? They might store more money offshore, like the $21 trillion that they already have parked outside the United States. It is just so disingenuous to hear the protectors, defenders, and beneficiaries of the super rich in this country try to make the case that putting tax rates for them back to the Clinton-era rate, topping out at 39-point-something%, would somehow kill the economy. And it's just bullshit. But they apparently don't smell it. They just keep shoveling it out. Also, the House issued a blistering report about a California Congresswoman, Laura Richardson, from the Los Angeles area. And I have to say, this is a woman I have no respect for. She has been found guilty in a 16-page scathing ethics panel report that she had utter disdain for the Ethics Committee and its investigation into whether she used campaign staff people from her congressional office and forced them to work without pay on her reelection campaign. And I hope that this is the, final issue that leads voters to reject the reelection of Laura Richardson this fall. She's in a tough race against Janice Hahn, who is, it's one of these top two primary results here in California, where two Democrats are running against each other in the same district. Dean Baker is a great economist, and in the Huffington Post today, actually dated July 30th, I just saw it today, he talks about the CEO plan to steal your Social Security and Medicare. He cites Stephen Perlstein, a veteran Washington Post columnist and reporter, who told us last week that the top executives of some of the country's largest companies are getting together to craft a budget package that they will try to push through Congress and get the president to sign. Most likely, this will appear in the lame duck session right after the November elections. And what they want to do is reduce the Social Security cost of living adjustment by 0.3%. It's not actually the right way to say it, by 0.3%, okay? And over a 20-year period, this would amount to a 9% cut in the benefits paid out to retirees. And it's just another sneak attack on our Social Security benefits when all we need to do to secure the Social Security Trust Fund is lift the phony FICA cap. It currently cuts off collection of Social Security taxes at incomes of $106,000 a year or more. And if they just blew that out, I haven't actually calculated the numbers, but it would go a long way toward making sure that Social Security is solvent. And interestingly, they want to cut benefits but not Medicare, because a lot of corporations and rich people make money off Medicare. Well, here in California, I want to say that there is some justice. And like many people, I was so shocked last fall when Occupy protesters joined forces with students who were protesting tuition increases at the University of California at Davis. And most people have seen the video of campus cop John Pike using this huge canister of pepper spray and spraying it across a group of students who were passively seated and locking their arms. And it was a very egregious abuse of police power. Well, Pike got his. They didn't pepper spray him. They just fired him. And July 31st was his last day of employment at the University of California at Davis. And this followed a report that was conducted by an outside group that was led by a former state Supreme Court justice here in California. And there are some interesting conflicting elements to the story. Now, the report indicated that Pike had repeatedly warned students that they would be pepper sprayed if they didn't leave. But it also says that Pike had told his superiors that he needed more cops out there and that he was afraid of losing control of the situation. Now, he and his cronies have also falsely stated that they were surrounded by students and that the students were threatening them. Anybody who reviews the video knows that surrounded by students, well, he was standing and they were all sitting on the ground with their arms linked. And he was able to jump around and over that perimeter almost at will. So the after-the-fact recriminations and efforts to rationalize what he did don't hold up in my view. But I am pleased that there has finally been a resolution of that ugly incident at Davis last fall. And finally today, Roseanne Barr, who was not selected as the presidential nominee of the Green Party, they chose Jill Stein, has moved on over to the Peace and Freedom Party. And this weekend, she expects to win the nomination of that party for President of the United States. And her ace, she has just announced that she is naming Cindy Sheehan as her vice presidential candidate on the ticket. Now, I will note that their convention is Saturday, and on Sunday, Comedy Central is featuring one of those ribald roasts, and Roseanne Barr is the subject. Now, I don't know how far in advance they tape those roasts, but it'll be interesting to see. Because of Roseanne Barr, how much media attention is given to the presidential ticket of Barr and Sheehan, Roseanne and Cindy. And I'll be watching that one with interest. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. This is the podcast we give away free, so put it up on Facebook and share it with your friends. I'd appreciate it.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.